Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 274. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a fun show we have for you this week. We must get started with our first guest. Jonathan D. Lovitz is a communications guru, a change agent, a speaker, a performer, an entertainer, and so much more. On the stage and screen, he was the star of MTV Network's Setup Squad on Logo. He's toured with multiple Broadway national tours, performed with every regional theater you could think of, and has hosted more red carpets than you can possibly imagine. Jonathan has served as the public face and voice for multiple nonprofits, including the Trevor Project, GLAAD, GMHC, Queerty, and more. He's delivered workshops at high schools and colleges all over the country on LGBTQ youth issues and advocacy. He currently serves as Director of Communications for Start Out, a national organization dedicated to creating great business leaders by fostering LGBT entrepreneurs through networking, mentorship, education, and access to capital. And now he's back here with us. Jonathan, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Now that is an intro. Thank you. It's good to be back.
Well, here's the deal. You're getting an extended intro because this is actually your third time on the show. You have not been with us for well over a year.
That's right.
It's been a year.
There's been this gaping void in my life.
That you didn't even know what it was, and now you're able to put a face to it.
Yes.
There
and
you
I'm
go.
Glad it's your face.
Get that a lot, and also none at all. So the two times that you were on the show, you were providing more legal commentary, communication commentary on everything that was going on with the Supreme Court, but we didn't really talk about you all that much. So I figured, let's do extended intro and do a little Jonathan D. Lovitz, This Is Your Life.
Well, I love that. Thank you. This is exciting. You know, when you're back doing TV and Broadway and all those things where I first started, all you do is talk about yourself. But it's been kind of nice in the past few years now that I've been working pretty heavily and exclusively on LGBT issues and things for the community to talk about things that matter. But you know what? Let's take a break.
Let's talk about you. Let's talk about you. So you grew up in Florida.
I did. I grew up in South Florida. Went to the University of Florida. Go Gators. Studied both theater and communications there. And before I, with days to go until graduation, found out I'd booked my first Broadway national tour. So theater got the job first, which is not how it usually works. Toured the country for years and years and, came to New York, settled, did the Broadway thing, TV thing, and, got to be a very happily open out man the entire time. That's how I ended up sort of in the public eye for LGBT affairs.
I love how you just glossed over so much that we're now going to pick apart. I mean, we need to put out there Jonathan D. Lovitz, outstanding graduate, class of 2006 there at the University of Florida.
Thank you. Thank you. That was a cool story about that was I knew about the award, and it was in the program that was printed. My folks found out about that. However, they did not know at the time that I had booked my national tour.
Wow.
So I'm up there, the dean of my college says my name, I go up to give a quick speech. Oh, and before I do, he says, oh, and one last thing, Jonathan would like me to apologize to his family, he won't be seeing you for a year, as he just booked the Broadway national tour of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And there were applause in the crowd, it was a lovely thing, but I could hear my Jewish mother in the fifth row shriek, grab her pearls, sink into her seat. It was a great moment. I'm sad nobody got it on film.
Well, let's pause with them. Talk to us about the support of Harold and Carol.
It has been phenomenal support.
Yeah.
As a performer, as an advocate, as a son, as a gay man, you name it, I'm a lucky guy to have such incredible, incredible support. They were always behind me. They made, especially my coming out story, so easy. It was like, yeah, and can we go for Chinese now?
Okay.
One of the reasons that I love working with LGBT youth so much is I know how much harder it is for most people. And the benefit of my really fortunate situation and really supportive family makes me want to help those who don't have it so easy all the more.
Yeah.
But no, my family's been great. They were actually just here in New York recently, and despite them both being Northeasterners, they wanted to do the tourist thing, so You know, we had a hot dog in Times Square and watched the crazies go by. They're great. I couldn't ask for better folks in the world.
I love it. I love it. All right. We got to talk about national tours. It's actually something that only came up for the first time just a few weeks ago when Nick Searley was on the show. Quite the experience.
Hey.
We love him.
We love it. We actually, Nick and I, we did the show Altar Boys together. He's a phenomenal performer.
That did not come up. See, there's so many little interconnections.
I know.
So Nick talked a little bit about being out on tour. It's quite the life out there on tour for one of these Broadway touring productions, is it not?
Oh, yes. You learn so much about yourself. You learn so much about things that you do and don't tolerate. You know, I think one of the things I learned the fastest and I think most beneficial lessons of the whole time was how simply I can live. You know, when you've got two suitcases to cross the country with, you stop acquiring.
Yeah.
You learn the basics. I became really independent. I'd never eaten dinner by myself before tour. But sometimes when you're with, 40 people every single day on the same plane and the same hotel, you need a little break. But it was the most incredible experience. I mean, I saw 49 out of 50 states. I saw all of Canada. It was truly incredible. I was right out of college. I mean, I was so Bambi-esque, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed on my first Broadway show. And I was so happy. I mean, literally, you could have told me to chop down the sets and carry them on my back every day. And I would have said, that's great. I would have been so happy to do it. I'm part of a team. It was great. And all the guys that were there on their fourth and fifth tour used to look at me like, really? That's the Disney boy in me.
I will ask you the question that I asked Nick. Tell me about that one place in the U.S. that you never dreamed you would have gone to, and it turned out it was pretty cool.
Anchorage, Alaska.
Wow.
Yeah, I said I played 49 out of 50. Hawaii still eluded me somehow. But I did get to go to Anchorage, stand on a glacier, and go to the wildlife preserves, and that's something that this little boy from Florida never thought that he would do.
Awesome.
But I also saw snow come down for the very first time in my life, standing at Mount Rushmore. I every winter had been in Florida previously, so I got to see snow come down for the very first time that day, and at a pretty amazing place. I'm a history junkie.
Okay.
American history enthralls me, and to know that I remember being in Springfield, Illinois, and running after the bus that we would take from the hotels to the theater, waving with my arms, don't leave me, because I was running late from seeing Lincoln's House. That's the kind of thing that only happens on a tour, and it's so incredible.
I love the gay Jew history buff.
That's me.
Okay, there are three words on the homepage of your website, and I thought that this would be a nice jumping off point to talk about, because I will pause here for a second and say that I totally understand the actor gig and the Broadway gig and being on TV. That stuff I understand. But when we get into the evolution of your career and we look at more of the communication aspect, I think those are the pieces I would love to hear you talk about more. So there's these three words that we'll use as our jumping off point, and we'll get your riff on all three. We start with the word advocate. What does being an advocate mean to you?
It means being trusted as a voice.
Okay.
I've always had one. I've never been afraid to use it. And when organizations like the Trevor Project and HRC and GLAAD and now Startout and all the various groups that I've had the privilege of working for have said, you get us, you know how to sell us, we would be honored if you would work with us, the honor was all mine. So being an advocate found me. There was an article written about me in the Advocate magazine called The Accidental Activist. And I stand by that all the time. In fact, one of the lectures that I do at colleges all the time is called Being an Accidental Advocate, because you can trip and fall into it. As soon as you find that thing that gets you so riled that you have to get out of bed and change the world because of it, that's when you know you found your calling.
There you go. There you go. Okay, next word. Communicator. What does being a communicator mean to you?
Oh, I mean, shut up, kid. I guess the funny way to answer this is I get asked all the time, because I do a lot of interviews on the news and that sort of thing. And people that knew me as an entertainer first always say, well, do you miss it? I said, look at what I'm doing. I'm going on, MSNBC and NPR and all of these huge networks to talk to people. And if you don't think I'm any good at this because I was an actor for so long, you're crazy.
Right.
So communicating is just getting people to give a damn, and then hopefully when they get home, making them realize that they have all the power in their fingertips on their iPhone to change the world. It really is that simple these days. Anyone with a smartphone can be an instrument of change.
All right. Now, here's the controversial one. I would like to get your take on what being a politician means to you.
I am a political junkie. I think that the representative system that we have is amazing, and I appreciate the experiment, you know, 230-some-odd-year-old experiment that we're going on now. It's still getting the kinks worked out of it. It's imperfect, and people are a little bit mistrusting because of some things that have happened in the past few generations, and I think that can all be rectified. I think one of the reasons that I am intrigued about being a politician is that I have seen firsthand and been involved in change through some of the groups I've worked with, and I know that that can happen on a macro level. You know, looking at, I have my eye on the seat in Congress for the next few decades, and I think that a whole crop of young, eager, bright-eyed, energetic, thoughtful people are going to take over the system and get it back where it should be. I don't know how easy it's going to be. I can't imagine it will be easy for anyone, but you don't get into these things because they're easy. You do them because you care.
Love it. Love it. Again, folks, we are here with Jonathan Lovett. Talk to me about why wait a couple decades. I will say, you know, when I ran for public office when I was in Vermont, and it was definitely an uphill battle to get elected, mostly because people were making comments about age of you're too young, you know, we need more of the old guard and people who are more established. And one of the things that's great about you and that I wanted to hit on is that you do represent a new, younger generation of activists, which often get silenced in our system. So why can't we just get your lawn signs out next week?
Well, for one, I'm still currently located in New York, splitting my time between here and all the various cities I travel to and speak in. But as soon as I make a decision where I'd like to run from, then we can start talking. You know, I've had some preliminary conversations with the great people at the Victory Fund
yeah.
who helped get LGBT people elected.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that we've talked about is, you know, Florida, where I'm from, could certainly use me a lot more than New York could.
Right.
And I agree with that. So I've got a lot to consider, but I know that a big announcement is not all that far off.
Okay. All right. Definitely shout out to the Victory Fund. They were so helpful in my campaign, and I certainly feel they contributed to my getting elected in Vermont. So people should definitely check them out, and they do great leadership workshops and talk through all the different things that you might experience as an out gay candidate, and in particular someone who is under, you know, 70, which it's helpful to prepare for that. It's helpful to prepare for that. You mentioned Start Out. Tell everyone, I gave a little bit of a shout out to Start Out, but tell everyone about Start Out.
Sure. Start Out is a fantastic nonprofit that I'm really privileged to work for. We are the organization that supports and empowers LGBT entrepreneurs. You know, when you consider that so much of the economy in America these days is being run by and generated by small businesses across America, we take for granted that there are still a lot of barriers that face our community in the business world. You know, we see lots of incredible momentum forward for in terms of role models for people who want to be actors and politicians and now, you know, members of the NFL. But if you want to be an openly gay CEO, who are your role models right now?
Right.
And that's one of the things that we're working on, is really making sure that the power and the strength and the ingenuity of our community in business is recognized, and also fighting to make sure that we have workplace equality and access to credit, all of the things that matter when you're trying to start a business and keep the economy booming. What's really great about it to me is thinking about this as a political gesture. You know, one of the ways you win those who may not agree with us on a social level over is making them recognize that diversity is great for business. So this is a long-standing battle that we have ahead of us. Something that's going to take a lot longer to solve than marriage and a lot of youth issues that are coming down the pipeline. So I think we're going to see groups like Start Out that fight for the business case for equality here for a long time.
Nice. Big fundraiser coming up?
Yeah, the Start Out Awards. This is my baby, and I'm so proud of it. Coming up on September 11th in San Francisco, we're honoring great people like George Takei, being hosted by Lance Bass.
Wow.
We've got three incredible entrepreneurs that we're honoring. Dave McClure, who's this guy, he's the most incredible ally the community has. He's a huge fundraiser and investor out of San Francisco. These two phenomenal women, Leon Chan and Amy Arrett, who are both incredible, inspiring female business leaders who also happen to be gay. And, you know, it's this amazing celebration of business and, you know, LGBT progress and the amount of companies that are coming to support us, the, you know, Bank of America and Chase and Google and Pandora and all of these huge names that people would think, you know, might not be so supportive of gay rights because it's such a public hot button issue, are coming out to really support us as sponsors, and we're so lucky to have them. And they see the same thing, that equality and diversity and the inclusion of everybody in the American dream helps us all succeed. So it's a really exciting job. I really love what I do.
How much of a space, how big of a space on my mantle should I set aside for whatever award you guys are giving me there?
Oh, it's a pretty sexy trophy.
Okay.
So, you know, we'll have to see. Maybe we can do most influential LGBT media personality. I'll see what we can do.
On the west side of Cleveland. Yes, let's add all those words. Just, I want to win. I want to win. Hey, let's talk about some fun highlights, some things that you've done. Grand Marshal of the Orlando Pride.
Heck yeah. So that's, you know, my new hometown. My folks and my sisters and everyone lived there. And just a few years ago when I was first working with Logo, they had me come down and be the Grand Marshal and, you know, work on my elbow waving. And but it's a lot more than that. It was so special. I got to give quite a few speeches, try to raise a lot of money for the local community down there, and raise awareness of the fact that Orlando is this really progressive metropolitan area. You know, the gang down there at the MBA, the Metropolitan Business Association, they're one of the strongest gay chambers of commerce in America, and they are doing so much to make, you know, what most people think is a really red area, a nice big blue square. They're really proving that, like I said, equality and diversity are good for everybody, and it's doing great things for Orlando. I'm actually going back. It's the second week of October, and it's their 10th anniversary of Orlando Pride, and they're having the Marshals return. It's like the Hunger Games. We're all going to have to battle it out. They're going to have me MC a bit, and it's going to be really it's a true privilege to be able to come home and see how far Florida has come. I mean, we're on the brink of marriage equality happening there, so I know that this is going to be a really joyous celebration.
I can't possibly be expected to move past the image of Jonathan Lovitz in the Hunger Games. Like, that's not something that people could expect from me, right?
Well, do you think I'd do okay?
I think you would do just fine. I think you would do okay. I think you would do okay. And
I'd be really distracted if PETA was there, though. I don't know that I keep that. That could get me.
I don't think you would. I think he's like 5'2".
Oh, that's adorable.
Okay. I'll give you that one. I'll give you that one. Let's talk about college workshops, too, because that's obviously near and dear to my heart. I'm a college professor. It's important that we go around and speak to different colleges. Give me a highlight of going around and speaking to various different colleges.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I've done, let's see, 30-some-odd colleges and high schools. Shoot, that really gets me when you go to high schools and you see these kids now who, thanks to things like Glee and New Normal and all, everything that they're exposed to on a daily basis, the conversations are so different from even when I was in high school, which was not all that.
It was like a year ago. It was a year ago, yes.
Yeah, let's go. You're really trying to win that trophy, aren't you?
Like you have no idea. It's sexy.
But, you know, I hear from these kids and also from the college students that they want to get involved. They want to make a difference. They've seen it affect their friends. You know, now it used to be we were, you know, 10 people removed from someone who's gay. You know, and most people only knew Uncle Arthur and Bewitched. And so now we have a friend. We have an immediate family member. We have that intimacy with someone who's been affected by inequality, and it makes people want to get up and fight. And the thing I try to teach people is the same thing that's kind of happening right now, the ALS challenge.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to see people get engaged about anything. And when I posted my own, you know, ice bucket response the other day, I said, you know what? This is thanks to someone who nominated me who cares about ALS, and I think it's a really valuable cause. But I'm dumping this on my head, and donating to Broadway Cares, which is an organization that I love. And I ask all of you to do the same thing. Dump some water on your head and give to something that gets you out of bed in the morning. And that's what I discuss at a lot of the colleges and high schools, that find anything that matters to you, and you are going to find a whole new reason to get out of bed in the morning.
Love it. Love it. Talk to me about how you think that your voice fits into the mix. You know, we've been doing the show for, gosh, a very long time, for about 7 years now, and talked to hundreds of folks and heard so many different commentaries on the LGBT community, on folks who are trying to make change, and how either tolerant or not various portions of the LGBT community can be for people coming in who want to create change. Talk to me about where you think your voice fits into that landscape.
You know, it's I'm fortunate. I have not ruffled too many feathers and have been fairly well welcomed and received by the community, and especially by allied organizations that I've worked with over the years. There are definitely times when I think we can all think of an example or two, when the community has been its own worst enemy.
Yeah.
And one thing that we can really aspire to is a sense of openness with one another. We can put a little ageism and sexism and genderism and just kind of lack of compassion for one another. We've been through enough in our own lives, so we can do a little more to support each other. And one of the things that also needs to happen is an appreciation for things that don't immediately affect us. You know, I speak heavily about business issues now, but used to speak a lot more about LGBT youth issues. And there were a lot of people who said, right, well, I don't have, you know, I had a fine coming out experience. I don't plan on having kids. This doesn't affect me. Come back when you're talking about marriage or something that affects me.
Yeah.
And I understand. I completely understand. I don't have a vested interest in you know, many things, but I try to be open and cognizant of them. And I think the community can take a little extra step in doing that and finding some commonality. You may not understand the issues of your trans brother or sister, but they're going through something that desperately needs your empathy and support, and often financial support. So give to them as if it was yourself, because if the table returned, you would love that. So that's something I hope to see in the community. I think one of the things I've been able to do with the platform I've been so blessed to have is bring people together, have some of these discussions, get people talking. And I think that's often more important than my own voice, is being able to leave the room with an open-ended question and then just letting people continue the conversations on their own.
If I may, I would also put out there one other piece that you put into this puzzle, is that you do bring a very palpable optimism to the mix. Would you not say?
Well, that's very kind of you. I appreciate that. That's just how I try to live my life. There's enough angst in the world. We can all do better. But, you know, I'm optimistic because I think we have a lot to be optimistic about, both in the community and just in the country. And a lot of it's going to come from just taking a step back from our own problems and being a little more cognizant of the things that unite us and the things that divide us. And there's a lot more of those.
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, we have to return to a segment that we discontinued, not intentionally. We just forgot about it. And then we got some angry emails from some listeners saying, hey, what about the music part? So we're returning to the piece of our show where our guests provide our songs for the week, which you have done for this week. So we will now ask you, Jonathan Lovitz, to do a little self-analysis based on the song selections that you have provided for our listening audience this week. We're going to throw out your two song selections. You will then tell our listening audience what these song selections say about Jonathan D. Lovitz. Okay? Very easy.
Deal.
Easy self-analysis. We'll start with I Am What I Am from Lacage. It's the song that we'll play you out in just a few. What does I Am What I Am say about Jonathan D. Lovitz?
Oh, it says that I have come a long way to try to figure out this guy that I am, and it's still a work in progress. And the thing that I love most about the work that I get to do every day is seeing that same kind of realization happen to friends and colleagues, and especially people who are just coming to terms with acceptance either of themselves or with the community that we are all so different, we are all so special, and it also doesn't hurt that it's, you know, a Jerry Herman show tune, which, who doesn't love getting up on a chair and singing one of those from time to time?
Love it. Love it. I think that's, by the way, how you're going to win the Hunger Games, but we'll get to that later. And then your second song, I think it's going to be through a show tune or two. The second musical selection, what is Dolly Parton's Better Get to Livin', which we'll play towards the end of the show. What does Better Get to Livin' say about Jonathan?
It says, there ain't no time to sit around and worry about worry. You know, I live in New York City, which you did too, and you know that there's plenty of angst to be had around here.
Oh, yeah.
But life's too short for all of that. I try really hard to only focus on the positive and spin the situation to that positive place whenever I can. So whenever things get a little tough, follow Dolly's advice and find a way to make it better. Put the smile on your face, change your perspective, flip it around, and you'll probably feel a whole lot better.
Nice. Nice. Now, I must ask, when is the Jonathan D. Lovitz fitness video coming out?
Oh, man. Well, certainly not anytime soon. My folks were just here. We ate like it was the Hunger Games. You know, that's very sweet of you. You know, I think maybe I'll keep it up so that when I'm in Congress, I can have a workout fundraiser up against, you know, Aaron Shaw.
I was going to say.
We can see, you know, we can see who has the, you know, the best abs for justice.
Oh, boy. Well, I have to say, you have one of the most fun Facebook presences in my feed. I enjoy your posts.
Well, thank you.
I find myself wanting to set you up. If I had someone to set you up with, I would. So we'll just, you know, we'll use This Show Is So Gay as your little okay Cupid.
All right. I like it.
All right. Where can folks go to follow all the cool things that you're doing? Not just to date you, but to actually see the change that you're creating.
Feel free to get in touch anytime via jonathandlovitz.com. I'm really active on Twitter these days. It's at JDLovitz. That's LOVITZ. I'd love to hear from you. I try to write everybody back, and it's really very special and moving for me to hear from people all over the country about what they're up to and ways we can all work together on things.
In closing, as our communications guy, close us out with one great piece of advice. We have all of our listeners out there. Everybody's trying to create change in their own community. You do so well to say on your website about how you want to be a voice for the voiceless, and I think that's just so important, so core to what we do on the show, so core to what folks are trying to do in their own communities. Give us one great piece of advice for folks trying to create change to communicate what they are trying to achieve.
Find your passion and turn yourself into a megaphone. If you care about an issue, a cause, a person, anything, harness that and then use whatever you have at your disposal. You don't have to have, you know, a national televised special to raise awareness. If you've got a Facebook page, if you've got a Twitter, if you've got 10 friends you can get together over dinner and start a local club, you've got your own engine for change. And we have all been witness to some really great moments in history that have come from, you know, a few determined people willing to change the world. So never underestimate that, and never underestimate yourself.
Jonathan, as I said before, you are a palpable source of positive energy, and it's just so clear that your heart is in it to bring that voice to the voiceless, and I urge you to keep doing what you're doing, man.
Well, thank you so much. A pleasure. We hopefully will not go so long between chats next time.
Sounds good to me.
Thank you for being such a great power for good on the radio.
Thank you, sir.
It takes a lifetime to become the best that we can be. We have not the time or the right to judge each other. It's one life, and there's no return and no deposit. One life. So make sure you like what's in your closet. It's noise. I
folks, and we are back. Well, a ton of LGBT news out there this week. Let's get to it. So while we were all sitting around and hoping that Major League Sports would become more welcoming to gay players, as that happened, we probably also should have been looking towards the media outlets to make sure that their eventual coverage of the sports that are now more welcoming to LGBT players reflects, you know, some sort of sensitivity. In that vein, ESPN, the sports network, has apologized for a news report that covered, did you guys hear this, the purported locker room showering habits of Michael Sam, the first openly gay player drafted by an NFL team. The debate started this week when Josina Anderson was asked on SportsCenter how Michael Sam, who was picked by the St. Louis Rams in May, is fitting in with other members of his team. After noting that one player told her that Sam is simply one of the guys, and by the way, it would have been great if the news report stopped right there, but it didn't, Josina Anderson began discussing speculation, because apparently there's speculation, surrounding Michael Sam's showering habits in the team's locker room. She said this, quote, "Another Rams defensive player told me that, quote, Sam is respecting our space, and that from his perspective, he seems to think that Michael Sam is waiting to kind of take a shower as not to make his teammates feel uncomfortable." Josina Anderson then went on to share some of the reasons one player told her that Sam might not be showering with other players, which I do not need to cover for you here. So yes, there on SportsCenter, they not only cover the latest scores and any scandals that stars get into, our little sports stars get into, but they also cover, if the player is gay, their locker room showering habits. ESPN has now apologized for that news report. Oh, they needed some more training there. I think they needed some more training there. A really cool story that, of course, makes me happy as someone who was in education last week, Mills College became the first single-sex college in the United States to adopt a policy explicitly welcoming trans students. This is huge. The new policy at the all-women's school in Oakland, California, now extends an explicit invitation to trans students, making it the only school out of the country's 119 single-sex programs to have implemented such a policy. The thorough policy language distinguishes between the school's women-only undergraduate program and its co-ed graduate program. And this is what it says, quote, "Applicants not assigned to the female sex at birth, but who self-identify as women are welcome. Applicants who do not fit into the gender binary, being neither male nor female, are eligible if they were assigned to the female sex at birth. Students assigned to the female sex at birth who have legally become male prior to applying are not eligible unless they apply to the graduate program, which is co-educational. Female students who become male after enrolling may stay and graduate." That is all from the Mills College new policy. According to Brian O'Rourke, the vice president of enrollment and admissions at Mills, between 3 and 5 of the school's 1,000 undergraduate students each year identify as something other than their assigned birth sex. He said this, quote, "The purpose of the policy is that we didn't want students to feel excluded in the application process." This is the best. I love this so much. The story goes on to say, pressure continues to mount against single-gender schools with trans-exclusionary admissions policies, most notably, and holy cow, most notably, Smith College, though other single-sex programs are taking steps to create a more trans-friendly environment. This is huge. I actually wrote a piece about this probably in May of last year, just about Smith College, when a trans student applied to Smith College, assigned male at birth, but identified as female, and Smith, it wasn't that Smith rejected her application, Smith returned her application. They would not even look at her application. And for Smith College to do that of all colleges is a little bit nutty. You can go to The Show Is So Gay and you can click on, there's a little Huffington Post, it's an H, little symbol there, and you can access my Smith College piece where I challenge them to reconsider their definition of gender. It's just particularly ironic for Smith for several reasons. Some because of their notable alumni, including Gloria Steinem. So many notable alumni who are all about challenging the gender binary. And then there's the part that Smith doesn't talk about as much, where they absolutely, once a female assigned individual applicant is admitted and starts going through the Smith experience, they absolutely both allow and support that individual to transition to male, as they should. But given that, how about the flip side, Smith College, where someone who is assigned male at birth but has transitions to female, who identifies as female, everything that Mills College has now said, where's the part where Smith, of all schools, allows that? So bravo to you, Mills College. This is the direction we should be going as our trans brothers and sisters are given more of a voice, because God knows they're fighting for it. And as we change these policies to give them more of a voice, this is the direction that American higher education should be going, and abroad as well. But American higher education is what I study. So bravo, bravo, Mills College. A report just came out that indicates that gay youth are more likely to report trouble in foster care. This is so important to talk about, something that does not get that much press. Nearly 1 in 5 LA County foster youth identifies LGBTQ, twice the rate ascribed to the general population. Gay foster youth in the LA County system have more placements and are more likely to live in group homes. Many gay youth do not feel safe, according to the report, telling foster families or social workers about having same-sex attractions. Gay foster youth are twice as likely to report being treated poorly by the foster care system than their straight counterparts, according to this new study of the LA County's foster care system. They have more foster care placements, are more likely to be living in a group home, and are three times more likely than straight youth to have been hospitalized for emotional reasons at some point in their lives. They are also highly overrepresented in the county system, according to the study released by UCLA's Williams Institute, which studies LGBT demographics. Lori Jean, the chief executive of the Los Angeles LGBT Center, had this to say, quote, "People refer to it as the dirty little secret that there are so many LGBTQ kids in foster care, but nobody's been able to document it." She went on to say, quote, "We need to know who these kids are, because only if we know who they are can we help them." In any given month, the Los Angeles County Department of Children and Family Services has about 7,400 youths between the ages of 12 and 21 in out-of-home care. Of those, about 1,400 identify as LGBTQ, so just an intensely disproportionate amount. The study, which was funded by a federal grant, is the first of its kind quantifying sexual orientation and gender identity of youths in any foster system. Despite the large numbers of youth in the foster care system, LGBTQ youth have been relatively invisible, the study said. Many do not feel safe telling their foster families or social workers about having same-sex attractions or questioning their gender identity. So much work to be done in the foster care system. And I know it's not the sexiest topic that we could cover on this show. Apparently, it's much more sexy to talk about the bathroom habits of NFL stars. But we have to talk about research. We talked about it years ago when we had Judy Bradford on the show, and people wrote in and said that was actually kind of interesting, because it is kind of interesting. When we do research out there, folks, it's so important to collect demographic data on the subjects to indicate sexual orientation, to indicate gender identity and its expression. So often our LGBT brothers and sisters are left off of the demographics of research, and we can't fully know the experiences of our LGBTQ brothers and sisters unless those collecting research are actually collecting that data. So again, not the sexiest topic, but so important that we change some of our research practices so that we can fully figure out, hey, what are the experiences of our LGBTQ brothers and sisters? So shout out for research there. We are going to take a quick break, and then we will be right back with some more news.
Showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. her Sunday evening. She was spinning such a sad tale, I could not believe the yarn that she was weaving. So negative the words she had to say. I said, if I had a fire,
folks, and we are back. Well, more LGBT news to throw out at you. Let's turn to marriage equality for this week's update. I should have some theme music just for marriage equality because there are updates every single week. Federal appeals judges bristled this week at arguments defending gay marriage bans in Indiana and Wisconsin, with one Republican appointee comparing them to now defunct laws that once outlawed weddings between blacks and whites. As the legal skirmish in the United States over same-sex marriage shifted to the three-judge panel of the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago, more than 200 people lined up hours before to ensure they got a seat at the much-anticipated hearing. While judges often play devil's advocate during oral arguments, the panel's often blistering questions for the defenders of the same-sex marriage bans could be a signal, here's hoping, that the laws may be in trouble. Attorneys general in both states, Indiana and Wisconsin, asked the appellate court to permanently restore the bans, which were ruled unconstitutional in June. Its ruling could affect hundreds of couples who married after lower courts tossed the bans and before those rulings were stayed pending this appeal there in Chicago. The U.S. Supreme Court has yet to take up a case, but Utah and Oklahoma cases were appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and Virginia's Attorney General also has asked the justices to weigh in. Appeals court rulings are pending for Kentucky, Michigan, here in Ohio, and Tennessee, while appellate court hearings are scheduled next month for Hawaii, Oregon, Nevada, and they are expected soon in Texas. Holy cow. Richard Posner, who was appointed by President Ronald Reagan in 1981, hit the backers of the ban the hardest. He balked when Wisconsin Assistant Attorney General Timothy Samuelson repeatedly pointed to, quote, tradition as the underlying justification for barring gay marriage. Apparently tradition is a legal argument now. And the 75-year-old judge said this, quote, it was tradition to not allow blacks and whites to marry, a tradition that got swept away. At one point, this judge ran through a list of psychological strains of unmarried same-sex couples, including their children having to struggle to grasp why their schoolmates' parents were married and theirs weren't. What horrible stuff, Posner said. Indiana Solicitor General Thomas Fisher, he was frequently cut into by Posner, and when Posner said, what horrible stuff, this is what Fisher answered, quote, all this is a reflection of biology. Men and women make babies. Same-sex couples do not. We have to have a mechanism to regulate that, and marriage is that mechanism, end quote. Apparently, marriage is the mechanism that regulates whether or not couples have babies. What on earth are you talking about, Indiana Solicitor General Thomas Fisher? I assume that there are any number of op-eds online, I haven't really looked for them, that just refute this piece. I was not aware that it is the sanctimony of marriage that regulates whether or not people have babies. This is crazy. This is crazy. That's kind of where we are. They're flailing about. They're clinging to arguments that are just nuts. They're nuts. In Colorado, a federal appeals court last week extended a stay of last month's ruling against Colorado's marriage equality ban. The court noted similar decisions out of other states as reasons for maintaining the stay, including a ruling from Virginia last week. The stay is likely to remain in place, yet again, until the Supreme Court hears the case. In other parts of the world, there's fun things happening around civil unions. Ecuador, the country of Ecuador, will soon recognize same-sex civil unions. President Rafael Correa announced this just last week. Same-sex couples living in the country who are barred from marrying or adopting children will have the full constitutional right to register civil unions and have them reported on government-issued documents. This is what President Rafael Correa has said. He met with representatives from Ecuador's LGBT community last week. So very exciting news there in Ecuador. Not good news. Again, more research that is being put out there. We like that there's more research. It's just kind of depressing, some of the results. Actually, literally depressing in this case. Americans who identify as LGBT report lower overall well-being. We're talking about well-being than their non-LGBT counterparts, according to the Gallup HealthWays Well-Being Index released just this past Monday. Respondents who identified as LGBT posted an average score of 58 on the 1 to 100 index, compared with the non-LGBT group's 62 score. The gap between the two groups was wider on the issue of financial well-being, with the LGBT population 10 points behind their non-LGBT counterparts. So for all those ridiculous stereotypes that are always out there, in particular around gay men, that we have disposable incomes, we are a full 10 points behind on the issue of financial well-being there on the Gallup HealthWays Well-Being Index. Go look that up. Some interesting stuff there. A new poll was put out there this week over there on the Gay Politics Report. And by the way, if you don't get the Gay Politics Report, you absolutely should. I get it every Tuesday and Friday. It is emailed to me. It is completely free. It is an amazing compendium of all the LGBT news of the week. It's little smart briefs. And actually, all you do is go to smartbrief.com and you can type in Gay Politics Report and you will be able to subscribe to it. Again, so much of what we talk about on this show is okay comes from the Gay Politics Report, which Dennis Dyson, who's been on the show quite a bit before from the Victory Fund, he's one of the folks that puts this together. It is so incredibly helpful. Well, they have a poll this week. The question is, when do you think an openly LGBT presidential candidate will win a major party's nomination? And your choices are within 10 years, within 20 years, within 30 years, more than 30 years from now, or I'm not sure. And the plurality, 36.5% said within 20 years, 21.6% said within 30 years, 18.7% said more than 30 years, and only 13.2% said within 10 years. And by the way, there's another 10% who just apparently couldn't manage the question and said, I'm not sure. I'm always curious about the I'm not sure's. So you can weigh in on that. And it's interesting because you would kind of hope that those numbers would be a little bit higher for it happening much sooner, because I would assume that the Gay Politics Report goes disproportionately to LGBT subscribers and their allies, and we are all filled with hope, but apparently not. Apparently we think it's pretty well far off. So, hey, if you are someone who is an LGBT person and you want to run for office, you totally should. We need out folks at all levels of government. This is what greases the wheels. So I encourage you, again, we talked about it earlier with Jonathan Lovitz, to stroll on over to thevictoryfund.org, and they can give you different information to support you. They support all levels of folks who want to run for office. Yes, of course, if you want to run for senator or president, I'm sure they will vet you and support you. First, they will vet you, and then they will decide whether to support you. But all the way down to dog catcher, no joke, all the way down to dog catcher, if it's an elected position, they want to help you. They want to support you. So they help me out, as I said before, and I encourage you, if you are considering, if it's a part of your voice to use it for public office, I push you to do it. I push you to do it, and Victory Fund can help you out with that. So apparently, it's going to be quite a while, according to the subscribers of the Gay Politics Report, until we have an openly LGBT presidential candidate win a major party's nomination. Over in England, Queen Elizabeth II last week officially granted a royal pardon to computer scientist Alan Turing, who committed suicide in 1954 following a conviction over a relationship with another man. Turing, who famously broke the Enigma code used by Nazi Germany during World War II, was convicted of gross indecency in 1952 at a time when the consensual sex between same-sex partners was considered a crime under British law. And British Member of Parliament Ian Stewart, he reacted to Queen Elizabeth II's pardon of Alan Turing, and he said this quote, "This royal pardon is just a reward for a man who was stripped of his honor, his work, and the loyalty he showed his nation." We had a story a few weeks ago, I don't know if you guys remember, or if you heard it, about a school that recognized a teacher who experienced some really hardship years and years ago because of his being gay. It's never too late. It's never too late to redress the wrongs that have been done. Obviously, we hope that the wrongs are not done, period, but they happened, and it was a different cultural mindset, and it's never too late to go back and try to right what was done wrong. So good job, Queen Elizabeth II. We'll try to get her on the show and get her comment. Probably not going to happen. Chelsea Manning said in a letter released Friday that the military has not honored her request to begin hormone therapy while incarcerated, despite public assurances to the contrary from Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. Manning, who was convicted of violating the Espionage Act last year and is serving a 35-year sentence, accused the military of paying lip service to the request and argues that denying treatment deemed medically necessary constitutes a violation of her rights. Chelsea Manning, a very controversial figure. A very controversial figure. That's all I have to say about Chelsea Manning. Over in Germany, Berlin Mayor Klaus Wowereit, and I'm sure I butchered his name, the first high-profile openly gay German politician, has announced that he will end his 13 years in office this December. His popularity in Berlin and beyond has been compromised in recent years by construction delays and cost overruns for the Berlin-Brandenburg Airport, which is now expected to be completed in 2016, years overdue and billions of euros over budget. Wowereit has declared it his greatest defeat, and he will step down to cries of economic incompetence, but he will do so in a city that many say he made cool. He said before his election in 2001, "I'm gay, and that's okay." And that was big news at the time. So kudos to you, Berlin Mayor Klaus Wowereit. I'm sorry that those construction projects did not go through, but well done on being an out gay mayor there in Berlin. A gay Chicago couple is suing a local taxi cab company after a driver behaved recklessly and kicked them out of his cab for kissing, the Chicago Sun-Times reported this week. Matthew McCrea and Stephen White state in their lawsuit against Sun Taxi that the driver objected to a, quote, simple one-second-in-length kiss they shared inside his cab while riding into the city from O'Hare International Airport in May of 2013. After they kissed, the suit stated the driver began flashing the vehicle's interior lights on and off. The lawsuit follows an October 2013 complaint the couple filed with the city. So folks trying to redress even more wrongs that they feel that they have experienced. And finally, we feature a random letter to the editor that was written in the Wausau Daily Herald, which is a newspaper in Wisconsin, and the title of the letter to the editor is, "Want Gay Marriage? Move to Another State." It reads, "Editor, I just don't understand why gay people like Eleanor Muchlechner of Stevens Point, featured in a recent story, think everybody feels and believes like they do. She says gay marriage is what the people want. No! Exclamation point. Obviously, a lot of people still believe a marriage is between a man and a woman! Exclamation point. That's why certain states haven't given in. If gay people want rights of married people, that's okay, but it needs to be called something else other than marriage. I've had to deal with getting two visually impaired kids through school with regular sighted kids. Life wasn't and isn't equal for them. Please don't come to me about gays being treated unequally. Yes, it would be great if we were all equal, but it's never going to be that way for everything. Does she really think her American dream is dashed because she can't be married to another woman? Surely she can still buy a house and pay taxes without being married to another woman. Why does every state have to allow gay marriage? Move to a state that allows it and let those who don't want to see gay marriages live in a state that feels the same way. Signed, Maureen Lambert from Mosinee, Wisconsin. I just wanted to read that to you. That's a letter to the editor. It was printed just this week, and I'm sure they're in the Wausau Daily Herald, and I'm sure I'm butchering Wausau. I'm not sure how to say it there in Wisconsin. Wisconsinites, send me an email at ken@thisshowisogay.com and correct how I'm saying that, because I'm sure I'm saying it wrong. But they printed it there. I'm sure it's getting them a lot of press because it seems to have gone quite viral. And I think it's a great reminder. I honestly, great, use your voice, Maureen Lambert. You wielded your pen. It got printed. It's going viral. But now, folks who disagree with Maureen Lambert, as I do, we need to use our voices and do the same. We need to use our voices to write our own letters to the editor, to create our own radio shows and podcasts, to do whatever it is that we do if we disagree with folks like Maureen Lambert to combat that. It's uncomfortable sometimes doing that. I have certainly been cowed in my life by the Maureen Lamberts who have said, you know what, life's hard. Do you really need gay marriage? Well, yeah, if I'm paying taxes the same as you are, I want the same rights. But you have to use your voice. You have to get past that moment. You have to pause. You have to acknowledge that, yes, it can be a little bit uncomfortable, but you have to use your voice the way you know how to do it. We've been doing it for 274 episodes here, and we're going to keep on going. Next week, you know what that means? Episode 275, very exciting. We have some really fun guests for you next week, guests that I'm really excited about, and I'm not even going to tell you who they are. Because you got to tune in next week to find out. You can stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com. You can click on the little iTunes tab. You can subscribe to our show, and it will automatically upload every single week. No muss, no fuss. Love that you guys listen. Love that you guys email us. Send those emails on over to ken@thisshowisogay. If you have guest ideas, if you have feedback, whatever you got, responses to our stories, whatever you got, send them on over. Love reading them. I do try to reply to every single one. I know I'm a little bit behind, but it's the start of a new semester, and I tend to fall a little bit behind. But that is it for this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay. Our thanks, of course, to Jonathan D. Lovitz and for the way that he is using his voice. I implore you folks to go use yours. It is a travesty for you to sit back and do nothing, especially if you have something to say. And I would argue everybody's got something to say. You just got to figure out the most powerful way to say it. Got it? Am I rambling enough? I think I'm done. Get out there. Go make a difference, folks. And while you're out there using your voice and making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?